All and I
right,
think
looks as if we're ready to go. Thank you. I'm going to ask our marshal to call the next case for consideration.
calling 824-1855, State of Minnesota versus Rodrigo Rojas Gasca.
Council, again, thank you for appearing on our remote platform by Zoom today. Please remember to introduce yourself and the party you're speaking on behalf of before making your argument. This is a state appeal, which is a little different out of the ordinary. I also want to remind you to pay attention to the clock, which appears on my upper left. Each of you will have 15 minutes. 5 minutes is reserved for appellate rebuttal if you choose to utilize that. And Mr. Haas, when you're ready, you have the floor.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jim Haas. I'm an assistant Olmsted County attorney, and I represent the state of Minnesota. Let me get straight to the point of what it is that I'm asking this court to do today. And that is, I'm asking this court to remand this matter back to the district court with instructions to allow Mr. Rojas Gasca to have an evidentiary hearing at which he may present testimony and other competent evidence in support of his motion to dismiss for pre-trial delay. And at such a hearing, the state can cross-examine his witnesses and present witnesses of its own if it chooses to do so. And the district
So
court can.
essentially, what you want is to go back to the Rule 3002 and instruct the court to have a hearing at this point to make a determination as to whether this goes ahead. I guess the reason I'm asking that is because back then the argument was a lot of time has passed, and that was, of course, before the charging. And now you come on appeal, which means a lot of time has passed. And then we have the 90-day period for us to make a decision. And then you go back and tick tock, time keeps moving along. Is there any other remedy that you could ask this court to implement that would speed up the process? Or are we not in a position where we can make such determinations?
Well, I suppose I could come before this court and say, look, the defendant, that is Mr. Rojas Gasca, had the burden of proof at that hearing. He showed up with no witnesses. He had the burden of proof and persuasion to show prejudice and bad faith and did neither. And I could, I suppose, ask his court to say, hey, he doesn't get a second bite at the apple and let's get back and get this on the trial calendar. But I don't know that that's really fair for Mr. Rojas Gasca because Mr. Schatz, his attorney, attempted or offered to submit evidence. He volunteered to be sworn and testify on his client's behalf. The district court effectively rejected that option. He offered to submit an affidavit and brief the matter, and the district court refused to consider that option as well.
Mr.
Instead,
Haas, may I ask, from as I understand it, the written motion sought by Mr. Gasca was a speedy trial, based on speedy trial. Now, when it got to the hearing in November, that's when 3002 was raised,
correct.
and then at that point, Mr. Gasca's counsel offered to present testimony and a record of the prejudice, including, I guess, by having counsel testify if there were no other witnesses. Did the state object to testimony at that time? Didn't the state
No.
say no? The
Oh, no.
prosecutor, okay.
No, absolutely not. And I will say this. I think the parties had maybe thought they could present this with affidavits, and there was a
I
suggestion.
think that is the and I'll certainly ask respondent counsel, but my reading of the record is that both parties had asked to submit something in writing, which was rejected.
Correct.
But that was on a going forward basis. No one came in with affidavits at the point of that hearing. And Mr. Gasca hadn't submitted an affidavit to the 3002 issue, as I understand it. And so it was like, let me submit affidavits or let me testify now. Right?
Yes, that's correct. There was a separate motion relating to discovery that was discussed at some length. There was an affidavit in support of that motion for additional discovery, but as the court I'm sure saw, that affidavit had nothing to do with any averment of delay. And as the court correctly, as Judge Smith correctly points out, the motion that was presented for the court was a Sixth Amendment claim, a speedy trial claim. And so, you know, maybe understandably or not, the state, if that's the claim they're expected to respond to, might say, look, we don't even have a speedy trial demand. You know, it was styled as a Sixth Amendment claim, but at the hearing, it effectively morphed into more of a due process or 3002 claim. So anyway, look, the respondent's argument is effectively that the state's only remedy here is to just refile new charges. But I think that there were errors below, and I think there's enough meat on the bones here for this court to find reversible error. And I'd like to list those off. I think there's four fundamental procedural errors that the district court made upon which this court has full authority to remand for further proceedings. First is that the district court effectively made a factual finding of prejudice at the hearing, although there was no substantive testimony or evidence made. It was effectively made on the averments of Mr. Schatz. And the district court, Mr. Schatz said, look, I'm ready and able to show the prejudice if that was desired by the court. And he expressed his ability or willingness to do that today. But the district court did not require that of Mr. Schatz, but said that I trust you could and that I believe you that there's prejudice. But that's not how these hearings are supposed to go, where the district court just takes it on faith that the moving party with the burden can meet that burden. I mean, imagine if this was...
I have a question more out of curiosity than anything. You indicated that at some point there was a discussion about simply recharging. Are you able to do that, or would this have been the law of the case as far as the dismissal? I mean, I'm looking at avenues and what is the path of least resistance because of all of the delays. Could you have done that?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's not a great path. I'll give you a comparison, and I was tempted to cite it. It's not supplemental authority, but it's a parallel case I have in front of this very same judge. It was a misdemeanor DWI citation. There was a challenge to the stop, and the hearing was held 37 days after the citation had been issued at the omnibus hearing. And the trooper didn't show. We only had 4 days' notice for the hearing. The district court, just without asking about our continuance or 301 dismissal, simply dismissed the ticket, and I refiled the complaint. In response, I got a motion to dismiss stating that the district court's ruling was a ruling on the merits and my sole remedy was an appeal. And the district court granted that motion to dismiss, the same judge. So had I proceeded by filing new charges, first of all, I may be faced with a recalcitrant district court judge and faced with the situation we saw in the Hart case cited in respondent's brief, where the court may say, I'm not signing that complaint. I dismiss that case, which would leave me the remedy of seeking a writ of mandamus, as what that happened in the Hart case. That's not a great option with respect to time and economy. And even if the district court signed the new charges, which what happened in my DUI case, I'd still be faced with that argument that your remedy should have been an appeal. And if I had not perfected a timely pretrial appeal, that avenue would have not been available. I think the most economical, appropriate, and just remedy is to find some errors and send that back. I was in the process of listing, and maybe not as succinctly as I could have, the additional errors that I think upon which this court could find error and remand. Did I answer the court's question? I may have.
You did. It was somewhat of a fishing project of my own, because if I'm not speaking for the panel, but in the event we agreed with you and we sent it back and you ended up with a dismissal based on failure to prosecute, then you're going to be looking at an appeal again because you're going to say another abuse of discretion. And I feel that we're in this gerbil wheel right now, and I'm just trying to see the way clear. But it's your request of this court, just so I understand, you're requesting as the appealing party that we remand for that hearing, for an evidentiary hearing.
Yes, Your Honor, that's what I'm asking this court to do. You know, With respect to the errors of the district court, one, as I mentioned, the district court effectively assumed prejudice without any evidence in the record. Two, the district court effectively shifted the burden of proof to the state to demonstrate that the defendant did not suffer prejudice. Three, the district court effectively shifted the burden of proof to the state to demonstrate that they were acting in good faith and did not delay the charges in order to gain an unfair tactical advantage at trial. And fourth, and I understand these overlap a little bit, but the district court failed to make any findings that the state acted in bad faith or delayed charges to gain an unfair tactical advantage, as is discussed in the due process cases. And again, I'm not asking this court to weigh in on the substantive merit of those, other than to look at what happened here and find that the district court did not properly place the burden where it was supposed to, made presumptions of fact with no evidence in the record, and then shifted the burden to the state. And their rationale was, well, the state just doesn't have their ducks in a row, and they were dismissing the complaint. I mean, imagine if this were a DUI case, like I was mentioning, and the trooper didn't appear. And the district court said, well, look, I know Trooper Johnson. I think he's a good man. And I trust you, prosecutor, that you could demonstrate this was a good stop. So I'm going to dismiss the motion, the defendant's motion to dismiss, because I think the state probably could show this was a good stop. I believe you, prosecutor. And let's set a trial date. I mean, it's an apples and orange comparison, but that's effectively what happened here was a burden shift to the state. So I think the appropriate, the most economical, just outcome is to send it back with instructions to the district court. And those instructions may rightfully maybe include some guidance as to the burden of proof and what it, the sort of thing that it might take to meet that burden in this context. But I'm not seeking a default
In
against Mr. Ro
fairness, Mr. House, to the district court, I mean, what I sort of read the prosecutor is doing is this wasn't that prosecutor's case. And when there was discussion of testimony, it's like, well, I'd prefer a briefing schedule and then submitting affidavits. And it's like, sort of like the state's not ready here to respond to this motion. Was I sort of took the district court's, you mean,
Well,
didn't
that was.
force, you know what I mean? It was an objection. You're right. I don't see the objection to it. It's just like, well, I would prefer not to have testimony because not really my case.
Well, I think the district court just approached this from the wrong perspective. The district court had it seemed to have it in its mind that the state had a burden of proof here. This was a Sixth Amendment motion, by the way, about a speedy trial violation for which there was not even a speedy trial demand. Mistakes were made along the way here, but the parties attempted to build a record. There just isn't a record upon which this court could even give substantive review as to the merits of the claim of pre-charging delay. That's the problem here is, I can't even appeal it substantively because there really isn't a record. And that's the problem with the district court's order. The remedy sought by the respondent here is for us to start over and just refile a complaint, which we could do. But again, we might face further obstacles, as we've discussed with Judge Werke, and it would add further delay to this case that nobody really wants. So I will suffice it to just again say that mistakes were made. They are reviewable, appealable. And I think the court has it well within its authority to just send it back with instructions to say, start over, do this the right way, and we'll see where it goes from there. With that, I'll remit any additional time I'd have for rebuttal.
Thank you. Respondent counsel, Mr. Murray.
Please, the court. My name is Bill Murray. I'm appearing on behalf of the respondent, Mr. Rojas Gasca, in this matter. Here, as the other side has said, the respondent is asking the court to dismiss the appeal because the court's order was not final or appealable. Instead, it's our position that the district court's dismissal was within its authority under Minnesota Statute 631.21 and is not appealable under Minnesota Rule of Criminal Procedure 2804. It's our position that the record supports that the dismissal was not based on the respondent's motion under 3002. but rather upon the court's own motion under 631.21. As such, the proper remedy for the state is to refile, not appeal. The respondent's argument presently boils down to the basis of the dismissal.
Mr. Murray, just to clarify, did anybody mention section 631.21 during the hearing?
No, Your Honor. Nobody mentioned that during the hearing. Specifically, the judge didn't mention that. But I would note that that is consistent with another case that has been decided by this court, State v. Voigt. In that case, the district court did not explicitly cite section 631.21, but rather went through and sufficiently explained its actions on the record, which would be our position on what the district court judge did in this case.
Did the district court use any of the language of the statute that, allows us to infer that the judge was referring to that statute and applying that statute?
So what the judge explicitly stated was, quote, "The state is not prepared to move forward today, so therefore I'm going to dismiss," and later saying, quote, "The state does not have their ducks in a row, so I'm going to dismiss the case," end quote. Now, these two things are not explicitly saying that I'm dismissing this in the interest of justice, but they do parallel other cases in which the judge did dismiss under 631.21 without explicitly citing 631.21 on the record. I think the vast majority of the transcript from that hearing supports this theory as well. At no point did the judge reference 3002 in the judge's order. It did not reference unnecessary delay. It didn't state that the respondent's motion was even granted. It didn't make findings consistent with 3002, despite both sides telling the judge that what findings are required for the judge to make that ruling under 3002. The appellant says that prejudice was assumed. It's our position that the prejudice actually wasn't assumed, but rather that the judge was, upon its own motion, dismissing the matter and what it believed to be the furtherance of justice. So, along that same kind of thread, this, I guess it goes without saying that this order also occurred before any evidence was even issued on the issue of 3002. So as noted in State v. Hart, the district court does have considerable discretion in scheduling matters and in furthering what it has identified as the interest of judicial administration and economy. And it appears, based on the transcript, that that's what the judge's intention was on dismissing this matter.
Mr. Murray, do you disagree that the defendant had the burden of proof in this matter? Did the district court misapprehend when it turned to the state and asked, "Do you have a witness here to explain the delay? Who had the burden of proof?" And I get to that because why would it be in the interest of justice to dismiss a case if the state didn't have a burden of proof at this hearing?
Sure. So, yeah, on that question, I wouldn't disagree on who had the burden. But I think the question on whether or not this truly was in the furtherance of justice or in the interest of justice, I think that that point is sort of moot, actually. And I think State v. Fleck, a case cited in my brief, in that case, the Supreme Court noted that the interests of justice were not furthered by the dismissal. However, the matter was not appealable, and the proper remedy was for the state to refile. So I think whether or not it truly was in the furtherance of justice is sort of outside of the scope here today. I think the main question here is, did the state, or excuse me, was the court dismissing the matter in what it believed to be the furtherance of justice? So I would argue that this matter is similar to State v. Hart, where an omnibus hearing was delayed several times and the prosecutor was 30 minutes late to the hearing. Similar here, the court's focus was on the lead prosecutor being absent and its view that the state was not prepared to move forward, whether that view be incorrect or correct. That's what the district court's focus was, and that's supported by the transcript. The obvious distinction between Hart in this case is that in Hart, it was very apparent that the court was dismissing or was attempting to dismiss with prejudice. Mr. Haas here today points to an example in front of the same judge where they attempted to refile and it was ultimately dismissed. But we don't have that here today yet. So for that reason, I believe that this appeal is premature. They could have refiled. And if at that time it was dismissed, then I think there could be.
Why, Mr. Murray, why wouldn't it at least require a remand to ask the district court what it was in fact doing, since it's very critical to whether it's an appealable order or not? And it seems to be, we're having to infer, you would acknowledge, I mean, without the reasons given, which should be given under the statute, and then us having to infer that, in fact, the statute's the reason, why wouldn't it remand to at least ask the district court what it's doing and an appropriate outcome?
Well, Your Honor, I would be the first to admit that the way that this was handled was unusual. And I think Mr. Haas and I both would agree that this, our job would be a little bit more easier if we knew exactly what the judge was attempting to order here. So if that was what was ordered, you know, that's not a situation where I think I would be protesting. I think that that may be appropriate here so that we could have guidance on that. Whereas here we're putting together through the transcript what we believe the judge was ordering. But I think reading the transcript in whole, and based off of the circumstance of not hearing a single sliver of evidence on 3002, that the court was in fact dismissing this and what it believed to be the furtherance of justice, and that she viewed, or the court viewed, that the state was not prepared to move forward on that individual day. The court's focus was not focused on the delay prior to filing, the delay leading up to the case. It was in that individual day, the lead prosecutor not being there. She also focused on, you know, affidavits not being sufficient. So her focus, it appears, was on that individual day.
Mr. Murray, what if, let's assume for the moment, let's just set 631.21 to the side. I mean, or let's assume that this court were to say that because that statute was never argued expressly, and because it was never, that was not the express basis of the district court's ruling, that we're just not going to consider that as, I guess then my question is, then what? And I guess maybe more specifically, Mr. Haase has suggested that this court reverse and remand for a hearing on 30.02. So if we were to reject your primary argument on the ground that 631.21 was not what the district court did, then what's your next argument?
Well, on that next argument, we would concede that we haven't met our evidentiary burden here. We weren't able to present any evidence. So our request would be that we be allowed to present that evidence. So if it were to be remanded, we would ask that it be remanded back to the omnibus hearing, and that the respondent be able to present that evidence.
And that, so in other words, it sounds like the same thing that Mr. Haase said. Is there any difference between you, given the assumption in my original question?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. I do firmly believe that this is a case where the appropriate remedy for the state is to refile, though. I think this could open the floodgates if this is a situation where it gets remanded every single time. An officer doesn't show up to an omnibus hearing, the state's not prepared. This is something that happens quite frequently at the district court level. And if the state's going to go through the hoops and hurdles, which obviously would probably be more burdensome to the state, I think that's not what the purpose of the statute of 631.21 and specifically 2808 on why it's not an appealable dismissal. So for those reasons, we would ask that the court dismiss the appeal. And I guess if there's no other questions, I would yield my remaining time.
Thank you, Mr. Murray. And Mr. Haas, turning back to you for a rebuttal. You're muted, sir.
You know, I think that Mr. Murray and I are largely kind of in the same position. And I think we'd both like to get this case back on track and have this heard on the merits. The remedy of having the state refile, one, it adds delay. Two, it might create questions about, I don't know, statutes, limitations, other procedural matters that are, just going to add delay to this case. But I think Judge Smith really encapsulated the difference and this distinction here between our case and the cases cited by the respondent, in that in cases where judges have dismissed in the interest of justice, or maybe for another term, for failure to prosecute, are cases where the state bore the burden of proof at a hearing and didn't have their ducks in a row, as it were, or didn't call an officer. The court is within its authority to dismiss the case, knowing and understanding that the state, if it chooses, can refile a new complaint. But this case is different because it was the defendant who bore the burden of proof and production at this hearing. If there was anything to be dismissed in the interest of justice, it would have been the defendant's motion. But instead, the court reverted to the familiar, which is to dismiss the criminal complaint. And so I think the correct remedy is to remand back to the district court with instructions to allow the parties, if they wish, to have a hearing on the merits of that issue, if that's something Mr. Rojas-Gosson wants to continue to pursue, so that there can be a ruling on the merits with the record that can be reviewed. As it stands now, as I think a respondent would concede, they have not met their evidentiary burden of proof, and they concede that they had that at the hearing. That's all we're asking, is to send it back to allow them to attempt to do that, so that we can have a ruling on the merits that could be subject to appellate review if necessary. The fastest and most economical and the fairest way to do that is to just promptly remand it so we can pick up where we left off. So respectfully, I'd ask the court, unless the court has any further questions for me, maybe I'll pause. And
it appears not.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I just respectfully ask the court to remand this back to the district court with instructions to hold a hearing and place the burden where it ought to be and proceed from there. Thank you.
Thank you to both attorneys for appearing today and making your argument in support of your case. The case is submitted. A decision will be issued in the 90-day statutory time frame.